Tell the people what you're here for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
You're listening to Radio Basics, the radio wing of Basics Community News Services, bringing news from the people to the people on CHRY 105.5 FM.
What up, Toronto? Happy Monday, happy family day. Hope y'all enjoying your long weekend. This is Radio Basics, and I'm Kirthi from Radio Basics. So we got a great show lined up for today, and I'm just going to start off with some overall, news, events that have been happening all over Toronto, as well as all over the world, and so on. So just touching home base. So another homeless person died Thursday night in the East End, making it the 7th homeless death this year. Overcrowded, underfunded, and unsafe shelter system is not new to Toronto, and it has been an ongoing crisis in the city. City officials have turned a blind eye to the crisis that has claimed 27 homeless people's lives since August last year. In the recent years, Toronto has had an influx in homelessness due to the increase in poverty and systematic barriers that lower people's standard of living. This is in the light that the city voted to cut emergency shelter by 110 beds per night. Hence, in Toronto, shelters fill up very quickly, and there's no guarantee that a homeless person will get a bed or chance to sleep each night. People have to wait up to 6 hours to find out whether they have a bed for the night or not. And even if they do, a safe environment is not guaranteed, as there are dangers associated in sleeping in shelters, which often are described as overcrowded, undignified, and prone to violence. The situation is dire to the extent that some homeless people view sleeping on the streets as a safer option to sleeping in a shelter. Anti-poverty activists are asking for more safe and clean shelters for the homeless. Last Friday, police arrested some activists fighting for a better shelter system after they refused to leave City Hall once the building closed. They will be appearing in court in March. Organizers are demanding city officials take this issue seriously, as this crisis is only worsening by the day. So that's a clear reflection of how Toronto is definitely a city for the rich, like a lot of other cities and places around the world. Now, just going to touch base and go to Washington, where around 50,000 people from all walks of life protested the Canadian pipeline project, demanding Barack Obama to reject the pipeline project. Yesterday's protest was one of the largest climate change rally in U.S. history, and arrests were made during the protest. This is said to be one of the most controversial decisions under the Obama administration. And Obama was out of town in Florida playing golf with Tiger Woods. From Canada's end, there's a huge push from the government and other lobbying efforts from corporations such as TransCanada to encourage the pipeline. An executive from TransCanada was quoted saying that if the U.S. rejects the pipeline, it would be, open quote, the craziest thing I could think of for the largest consumer of oil on earth, end quote. On the other hand, there have been mass demonstrations taking place all over North America, from the native reserves to Canadian and U.S. cities. The pipelines are designed to cut through native reserves, which directly put them at risk of facing the brunt of possible leaks, not to mention the environmental plunder and pollution caused while extracting oil from the tar sands, which would also terribly affect the First Nation people's lives. Moving right along, over to South Africa now, where an anti-apartheid leader, Mamfela Ramphele, accuses the ANC party of abusing power, corruption, and undermining democracy, and decided to start her own party. She co-founded South Africa's Black Conscious Movement to politically challenge Nelson Mandela's 101-year-old African National Congress. This is happening as more and more South Africans live in poverty. Increased gap between the rich and poor, high rates of unemployment, and the youth struggle to survive in these conditions. 71% of South Africans between the age of 15 to 38 years are unemployed, and this age group make up 60% of the population. As Ramphael puts it, open quote, "Perhaps worst of all, my generation has to confess to the young people of our country, we have failed you," end quote. Over the years, the country has been seen has been seeing a steady increase in civil unrest, where people have violently protested against joblessness, lack of education, healthcare, as well as utility shortages. The party is said to be funded by South Africans at home and abroad, and will contest in 2014 elections along with several other other parties in opposition. Ramphael spent 7 years under house arrest enforced by the white minority under apartheid regime in the 1970s, and she used her expulsion to a remote rural area to start a health program and empower women through initiatives like growing vegetables. This will be an interesting story for us to follow in the future. So now that's it for just an overview of what's been happening around the globe. Now I'm just going to play a tune. It's called Never Take Too Much. And it's by a Punjabi brother. And check it out.
You see, the world is on a hustle, and your faith is just a muscle. Let's see you flex all that ass. Your feet kicking and let that apathy begin creeping and seeping. And I'm weeping when I hear about ladies in Hades feeding their baby mug. I'm talking dirt cookies, have to pay for fucking dirt cookies, have to buy the fucking dirt to make the fucking dirt cookies, use the sun to bake the fucking dirt cookies. Wait, relate, debate, rookie, shake the way you think and thank your lucky stars. So you a lucky star, what's at stake? Took me a couple summers to drum up the sum of what I become. Now on the come up, we run up on dumb and dumbers and wake them up from their slumbers. Numbers never lie, but they can bend the truth. Rhyme to strum guitar strings of frustrated youth and babies of the 80s who maybe like me but lately innately feeling greatly disenchanted, disenfranchised, disemboweled, disrespected, disconnected, disavowed from the crowd. Silence keeps it down without a voice, a choice, but homie, we can't live without them, so we taking them by force. Just remember, never take too much. Always remember, never take too much. Took the castle, disentangle the shackles they meant to hold us, put the shrapnel in the heart of the leader, just for the non-believers thinking we retreat into battle, marching to freedom. We the children of the proletariat who broke the lariat to overthrow the master and drug in a stolen chariot. Scariots abound on precarious grounds. I'm dodging various rounds on nefarious areas, burying these skeletons of who I used to be. Truthfully, I couldn't just deposit them in my closet. A eulogy was just never written, so I let attrition settle. Now my levels and past the descriptions that they resemble. And I fight with my back to these tight ropes, tight yokes that blight throats, suffocators from singing the right notes. Right hope over the drummer's cadence when summer fading. I left from under shade and I'm running in thunder raining. And we dancing in the downpour, traveling man with baggage in hand. I drag it on my route north, abandoned a plan for ground floor. Made our own blueprints and no excuses, knowing we bound for a new height. That's why they told us to know the ledge, cause you never know the size of the drop below the edge. So just remember, never take too much. Always remember, never take too much.
Never take too much. This is CHRY 105.5 FM.
Thank you. I'm not gonna let nobody stop me from doing what's right. I'm not gonna let nobody stop me from doing what's right. I'm not gonna let mother or my father or any sisters or my brother. I'm not gonna let nobody stop me from doing what's right. Well, there's some folks say that I am too butch. I'm just a good gal having fun. They don't know there's a death angel still around. Don't know when they come, but when they come, I'll let them catch me with my work undone. I'm not gonna let nobody stop me from doing what's right. Big solo.
Yes, you're listening to Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5 FM. This is Kabir taking over the mic from Kirthi, and you're listening to Faith Nolan live with Mary Watkins. Nobody stop me. So often on Radio Basics, we focus on issues impacting working class and oppressed people, whether that be police brutality, marginalization, gentrification, and a number of other issues that are impacting people in the city. Despite the fact that we're located on a university campus, it's rare that we cover issues particularly relating to universities or students, for the reason that we know post-secondary institutions in a society like Canada, in an imperialist state like Canada, are often exclude, deliberately so, the voices and the presence of marginalized people. One of the few programs, however, that does allow these voices and these bodies to be present in post-secondary institutions is the Transitional Year Program at U of T. Today, we have three comrades in the studio, Shazali, Abdi, and Heather, from the Transitional Year Program, on to discuss not just that program, and not just to sing its praises, but to come to its defense, because it is in fact under attack. To begin with, Abdi, if you can introduce and tell listeners who are not really aware about the program and the reason why you guys are in the studio today.
Okay, no problem. I just want to thank you for having us, first of all, of course. TYP, which stands for the Transitional Year Program, is at the University of Toronto, St. George campus. It has been around for 43 years. It is an access and equity program that we hold. It serves many communities, First Nations, Africans, working class, sole support parents, people from the LGBTQ communities, landed immigrants, all sorts of people.
Okay, and can you explain a bit, and for anyone, to explain a bit about the history of it in terms of how long it's been around, the reason and how it was initiated in the first place, and the benefit it serves, I mean, beyond accommodating certain groups of people who we know are largely absent from post-secondary institutions, the particular benefit it serves to bring in those people, you know, from colleges and mm-hmm. from other places, and allowing them to pursue education at that level.
First of all, I just want to say that it's been around for 43 years.
Okay.
It's an amazing program, mm-hmm. Co-founded by Karen Brathwaite, amazing lady. Definitely. She pretty much, it's a year program. You could also do an extended program, which is 2 years. Mm-hmm. It gets you, after completing a certain amount of prerequisites, you get accepted into the university mainstream, okay. Into the arts and science faculty, and get a chance of earning an undergrad degree.
Excellent. And are most people that are coming into the program coming from colleges? Are they coming from high school? Like, what's the...
A lot of people have many different stories. Many people haven't been in high school for 20 plus years. Some of them could have just been out for a year. Mm. It's not...
I said I'm
exactly right.
For those that are in the studio right now, if you three can give us your personal experiences and relationship with the program, and you know why you feel it's been important, how you as individuals have benefited from it, mm-hmm. just to give listeners kind of a personal perspective on the TYP.
Hi, my name is Shazali. I just want to thank you guys for having us.
Absolutely.
And I want to wish everyone out there happy family day, especially
yes.
my sisters, brother, and my mom. And back to the question, well, I come from a working class background, and I was raised by a sole support mother. I have had little and unsuccessful experience with academic systems. Over the years, I have traveled and had many interesting jobs, although they were mostly dead-end jobs or jobs that I could not advance in due to lack of credentials. I was a person of self-hatred, had a lot of resentment, rage, and resignation. I mean, moving forward now, after having gone through the transition program, it gave me a second chance. This played a very crucial and important role in my life, you know. The program has empowered me in many ways, returning my self-confidence, giving me knowledge, writing skills, leadership qualities, and, you know, now I can hope for a better life. Overall, it has given me the chance to realize and making some of my dreams attainable. I mean, where my life is today compared to the past, I owe it to the Transition Year Program for believing in me, you know. But despite all this, I still have a lot of resentment and rage. It still follows me.
Absolutely. And Heather, if you wanted to intervene as well.
Once again, thanks for having us. My experience was that I didn't finish high school. Mm-hmm. I dropped out multiple times, went back. and transitional year program for me, I did it in 2 years. As Abdi was mentioning, you have the option of doing the extended program. So coming to university, I got the chance to do evaluations and figure out what disabilities I had. So through the transitional year program, they offer a lot of support. That is one of the greatest things about it. You just don't go into the university and you're just a number. You're a person, you know all the faculty, you know all the staff, their office staff and everything, and you get a lot of support that you wouldn't get in the greater university. I come from a background, I'm African-Canadian of Jamaican descent and first-generation Canadian, and my parents are, my mother is not educated past a grade 3 level, so I had complications with your parents not being able to help you with homework and stuff like that. Simple things that like that, and you just get passed along grade to grade, and then eventually somebody just says, well, forget about you, and you just drop behind, and that's okay. So because of those things, I didn't finish high school, ended up in transitional year program, and it was a second, third, fourth chance, and I messed up while doing the transitional year program, and they did everything in their power to accommodate me and make sure that I succeeded, and I'm here in the second year, and I also have to be thankful for the fact that you go through life experience and you have all these life experiences and you get to the program and you get to do a course such as like equity studies or Aboriginal studies, and you get the words to put behind all the systematic exclusion and things that you face. So I guess I have to thank the university for giving me the language to be able to fight them back.
Exactly. And Abdi, did you want to say anything too on your personal behalf? You gave us an overview of the program, but...
Sure, no problem. I come from a family of eight. I am the youngest at the age of 22, so you can see what I was working with, right? We came here in 1991 from Somalia, so my whole entire family was born there. We came here, and pretty much I was already really young, so I grew up learning English, but the rest of my family had to learn, right? So I didn't really have a lot of help with my parents. My father lived in the States, so he never lived with us. So it was really hard. I didn't really have a lot of people to help me with school, so I kind of had to do things myself. I didn't really do too good elementary school or high school. I was kicked out in grade 12. Very unprofessional reasons, but, you know, people get past these things. I wasn't the best growing up, but I'm doing my best. Mm-hmm. I've been in trouble with the law, but I'm back on my feet. I'm good. I'm in the University of Toronto now. I did the TYP program. I did the two-year program and completed it successfully. So now I'm mainstream university, doing a minor in philosophy, haven't yet chose my major, but we're getting there.
I really am thrilled that you guys are here today, and your stories are very powerful. And you guys all mentioned one word, which was support. And I'm just kind of curious to know what kind of support you got from U of T and people around you. Like, how do professors view you? You know, like, how are the interactions like?
If you've been to the transitional year program, it's a small house, 49 St. George Street, right in the middle of U of T campus. We have our own little home, and it's amazing. We have all our faculty members in there. All extra help. We have alumni. Like, I am also alumni. Heather is a current student, so we would work together all day, right? It's never an issue. We have a whole bunch of people working together. If you can't find a faculty member, there's an alumni there to help you right away. It's love that we show in that building, right? There's no judgment there. There's no animosity there. Everybody gets along. It's a beautiful place. You guys got to come visit us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think one thing that also came forward, you know, is that the educational system, from even Heather, what you mentioned, and something that definitely struck me on both the personal level and just in general, that from a young age, from elementary school, we know that the educational system, like any other facet of the system, is set against certain people from day one. And, you know, whether that's even, Abdi, what you touched on, being able to have a quote-unquote, and although it's such a liberal-sounding word, like a second chance, the fact that our children, you know, our youth, don't get a second chance in mm-hmm. the school system. The one mistake you make, the one from when you're little, you misbehave in class, he needs, you know, Ritalin, right? Or he's behavioral, or he has this issue or that issue. And that's always the reaction, and it's always seen as those bodies are assigned to be threats and somehow unable to be educated. And of course, when we get to high school, it's that school to prison pipeline, which we know exists. Mm-hmm. And now with, you know, Toronto Police directly in many high schools in the city, the most marginalized high schools, it becomes that direct pipeline. So it definitely seems that you know, these stories that are being that you guys are sharing are, as Kirti mentioned, are powerful. And we should also recognize the number of individuals who have not even been able to attain the TYP or found the TYP, but have been lost, and not just lost as in, you know, this was an accident, but deliberately pushed out mm-hmm. by that very hostile system that you guys are talking about. I want to go back to, I mean, before we move on to detailing what the attack is, why TYP is important in terms of, do we know of any other, is it unique? Do we know of any other program like it that exists in the city? or for that matter, even in the country among other universities, why is it that it specifically is important?
Well, this program started 43 years ago. They have, at the same time, they started one in Dalhousie, Nova Scotia. Okay. I think they go by the same name like we do, the Transitional Program. Mm-hmm. And this program has been a success. And York University has a program that is modeled after us, but I think they call it the Transition Program. Mm. And it's been running for 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. And Ryerson has one as well, modeled after our program. And I think University of Manitoba and Brandeis University have mirrored programs similar to ours.
Based initially on the one in Dalhousie, and then the ones in Toronto were based on the one in U of T.
Yes.
Okay. And you mentioned briefly, you did go into extensively the support that you received. If we can hear a little bit more about the course material, the professors, you know, something that again struck me was what Heather talked about in terms of being given the language. And I think overall this is why working class people, oppressed people, are not allowed inside these institutions, because it gives us the language to deconstruct the system and to know what's happening to us. It's not just, we don't blame ourselves. It's not, you know, African people or oppressed people are not poor because we're lazy. It's poor because we were robbed by this system, right? And once we begin to understand that, the system has to deal with a lot more serious threat than just people who are, you know, blaming themselves or blaming each other. Mm-hmm. So if we can hear a little bit more about the course material specifically, and the support that's been given in that regard, or why that specifically is an important part of TYP.
Well, the course material, it emanates from the life experience of students. I mean, it consists of education that allow those who have been who experienced oppression to critically examine their social and personal reality. And through reflection and understanding, it helps change their condition. I mean, that's what denied them a place in the university in the first place, right? So you guys want to touch on some of the subjects we cover?
You do multiple, in the transitional year program, you do multiple TYP courses, as well as you have an option course, which you choose between bio, sociology, equity, and Aboriginal studies. Mm-hmm. One TYP course of note is Contemporary Issues in the New Millennium, which you take in the second term of the program. This, in a section of this program, of that course, you look at broader economic issues in places like the Caribbean, places in Africa, globally. You look at economic global situations that people are facing. Mm-hmm. And keeping of note that a lot of the people that come through the transitional year program are from these backgrounds, are from second generation Canadians with parents that came from foreign countries. Mm-hmm. And you look at, and you get to learn about all these, the experiences and the lived experiences that your parents went through, and understanding why you experienced life and experienced certain things the way that you did. Mm-hmm. So everything is layered, and everything, an internal reflection, reflecting externally upon the university, all these systems that are in place in Canada and the world abroad. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think we're the only program in one of our literature class or English comp, mm-hmm. Where we have culturally diverse speakers come in. I mean, we had a Holocaust survivor come in. We had First Nations people come in. I think we had someone from Rwanda come in. Mm. So what we learned there reflects the student body that represents the transition program.
And I know another point you guys wanted to bring forward, again, before we go into the real reason, you know, why we're here in the studio, is that this everything that you're describing, unfortunately, may not exist unless there's some kind of pushback. The impact that it has, not just on you guys as individuals and on the individual people who may be in the program, and this is often what we see, is that, you know, when working people are let into these institutions, it's often just them as individuals that succeed, and then their community becomes left behind. But one important point about TYP is the impact it's having, not just on the people who are in the program, but the greater communities that they come from, if you guys can go into that as well.
There's a lot of individuals who do what we call the outreach program, mm-hmm. which is we send many faculty or alumni to many areas of Toronto where we wouldn't assume, well, quote unquote, assume those children could make it to the universities. That's what they make it seem. But many of them are very bright, and many of them succeed tremendously after accepting to come to the university and to join the transitional year program, right? When actually given that opportunity. But a lot of them also don't know about the opportunity, so it's very hard for them to even, it's hard for them to even hear about it because of where they reside, right? But the word does get around, and when they do hear about it, they are very interested and they are intrigued, and they do come and they see what it is, and they see a lot of people that look just like them and have the same similar issues they went through, right? And that shows them that they're not singled out and that they can do something, and they will do something about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have like students that came out of the penitentiary who are in the program. I mean, these guys are now doing masters and stuff like that. They come back to the program doing peer tutoring, and they also go back to their communities. I mean, these people understand social situations that people go through. So they go back and give back to their communities, you know, their role models. You know, they even spread the word. They even bring people to the program for them to succeed, you know, give them a chance to, or just to better their life, right?
Absolutely. It's not only students are people that we find in Toronto communities, like outside communities. There's many people who've heard of this while incarcerated and actually decided to take a look into this. And without giving out any names, there's people that have joined the transitional year program who have served either a long sentence, short sentence, it doesn't really matter, but they have came and they have changed their lives and they have succeeded. Many of them are in teachers' college, some of them are graduating, some of them are just getting their undergrads, but a lot of these guys are succeeding, and it's amazing to see.
Now,
So I was just kind of wondering, so it seems like it's a very successful program from what you're saying. Okay. Based on everything you guys said, it seems like it's an awesome program. So what is the reason that they're giving you in regards to why they want to cut funding?
Absolutely. I think, yeah, so if we can maybe preempt that with just explaining what exactly is the situation now, the reason that we're here in the studio today, and the reason that, you know, we're going to be carrying this on, not just in Basics, but, you know, any progressive organization should be interested in the TYP because of what's happening now.
So just recently, last week, Wednesday, on the 13th, we had an emergency town hall meeting on the university campus to bring awareness to the issues that are going on in TYP right now. Some of these issues include finding a new dedicated space that is for the transitional year program, the autonomy that the transitional year program currently holds, and that we're losing faculty complements at the end of this academic year. So starting September 2013 for the new academic year, there will only be 4 faculty remaining within TYP. There isn't necessarily a funding cut. It is more an allocation of funding. Mm-hmm. Trying to find funding to be reallocated to TYP.
Yeah, that term was more technical. Instead of the university coming outright saying we're cutting or shutting you down, they go, you know, with allocation of funds and these technical terms.
The way I see it kind of is that, also, just to make it clear, they're not cutting out our funds. That's just to make it clear. But what they are doing is pretty much hanging the TYP program and letting it dry out and letting us just kind of wither away.
Starving us.
Yeah, exactly. They just starve, you know, like you said, starving us out of existence, basically. So
let's go through this piece by piece. To begin with, so the new space, so the wonderful space you mentioned and generously invited me and Kirti to observe. At this point, what's the timeline on that? What's the precariousness of that space?
I don't have an exact time or date of when this would go down, but they do have people coming into our building. They have many people walking around with their suits, with their clipboards, looking at walls, talking about, we're going to take this wall down, this wall's going to stay, this is where we're going to do this, and this is where we're going to do that. They have lined those colored lines outside all over the buildings, marking their territories, talking about construction here and digging here. They haven't really done anything, but they're showing us that this is going away in a very subtle way.
And there's been no official reason given in terms of what it's going to be, what else it would be used for, or what it's going to be going to.
When the space, where we're currently housed now, when that goes down, it is going to the engineering department. So it would be the engineering department that would be taking that space.
Okay. And second, you talked about autonomy of the program. And I'm assuming that means there's a push to integrate it with something else.
Yes.
I mean, essentially, that it would lose its character.
Yes. Yeah. So to go further into that, TYPU right now currently is one of few colleges and faculties within the university that have the ability to directly report to the provost office. The issue with that is if TYP is amalgamated with another college or faculty within the university, as has been proven before, it won't be as successful. You have layers of finances, authority, stuff like this.
Sub-councils, yeah.
Exactly.
Stuff like that.
When you are inside a college, it goes through a bunch of sub-councils for any issue to get resolved, for finances to be distributed. So when you lose your autonomy, it's really a great issue that we're facing right now.
Yeah. And so what exactly are they pushing for? Are they giving an example of a department they would want it to be integrated into? And in terms of the personal stories that you each shared, how would that, and even the impact you mentioned in terms of people coming from being incarcerated to being part of it, people coming from, you know, barely finishing or not finishing high school to being a part of it, how would that impact the nature of the program, it being coming part of something else?
They did want to move or relocate the transitional year program at Woodsworth College, but that would also mean that we would be sharing the whole entire building with everybody from Woodsworth College, which is not a bad thing, but owning your own home for the last 40 plus years, it's really hard to just let that go, right? I haven't been there for 40 years, but I've met so many people who went through that program and heard their stories, and they just love coming back to see that house there, and they come there and they just see a whole new bunch of alumni, a whole new bunch of students, and it just brings that feeling back, like when they were there, right? So for us to get moved to Woodsworth College, which I would never want to ever do, it's just kind of it's just cruel. It's cruel to move us.
So we are going to go to commercials, and we're going to come back with breaking down the rest of the ongoing attack against TYP. And I think, as Abdi put it, you know, if you've owned your house for how many years, it's hard to go and live in someone's basement, you know?
Of course. Some,
the basement of Woodsworth, that's not going to happen, and that's not what we're...
what we're looking for.
Sia Henson was born a slave in 1789 in Maryland. He was sold three times before he reached the age of 18. By 1830, Henson had saved $350 to purchase his freedom. After giving his master the money, he was told that the price had increased to $1,000. Cheated of his money, Henson decided to escape with his wife and children. After reaching Canada, Henson formed a community in Chatham, Ontario, where he taught other ex-slaves how to be successful farmers. Henson also became an active Methodist preacher, spoke as an abolitionist on lecture tours throughout Britain and British North America, and worked as a part-time conductor on the Underground Railroad. American abolitionist Harriet Beecher Stowe read his autobiography, The Life of Josiah Henson, 1849, which was the inspiration for Stowe's novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, which is still read today.
Stay tuned to CHRY throughout February for more spotlights like this one. African-Canadian history comes alive on CHRY 105.5 FM. Listen, discuss, celebrate.
Community Radio, CHRY 105.5.
We're back, Radio Basic, CHRY 105.5, and in the studio we have Shazali, Abdi, and Heather from the Transitional Year Program at U of T.
which is currently under attack by the administration, being starved of funds, being told on the one hand that the space that they've been using, a space which has become a safe space, a safe zone, and a comfortable place for the alumni and for the current students of TYP, is under possible attack. The autonomy of the program is also under attack, and we're going to continue that discussion now with a little bit more information. I think, Shazali, you wanted to give us some more information specifically about Woodsworth and what's being asked, what's problematic about that possible integration.
Well, Heather, I'll let Heather touch on that.
Okay.
Heather?
Okay. The university, there is another bridging program that is available through Woodsworth College. The thing of note is that their bridging program, the one within Woodsworth, only has a success rate of 35% out of 900 students. Mm. On the other hand, the TYP program has a success rate of approximately 70 to 80%, with our grads, TYP grads, enrolling into the Faculty of Arts and Science. This is data taken from the Governing Council agenda. Mm-hmm. So it's out there.
The facts are there. Everybody knows that the transitional year program is very successful. Many of our students are extremely bright. Enough of them, a lot of them get into different programs. Many people from the transitional year program graduated and became members of parliament. They became lawyers. They became doctors. They've been very successful people. Many teachers, yeah. Very successful people.
And would you say the reason for that difference in success, 35 to 70 to 80, is pretty huge?
It's
difference.
Go ahead.
It would seem to be the fact that you said that the transitional year program not only covers issues, that students can relate to, has professors, has course material that they can relate to, but has that independence where you can gear that whole year towards meeting those students' particular needs, as opposed to it getting caught in the red tape of, you know, another college.
Exactly. The faculty love to work hand in hand with the students, and as much time as they can. Of course, everybody has their lives to live, but they give so much time to the students. They help tremendously. They're always there. It's hard to not find a faculty member there. And if they are there, even if they're working, even if they're crammed and have so much paperwork to do, they will put that time aside to help you out. And that's with that comes great success.
Now, the last point of the attack that we did want to cover was what you mentioned about faculty complacency?
Compliments.
In regards to how many, if we can explain the number of faculty that, were once assigned to the TYP, and what the number will be at the end of this academic year, and what that's going to mean in terms of a difference from what Abdi just described, and obviously the success rate that's the result of that, how that's going to impact that direct relationship between professors and the students.
Okay. Well, not just this year, but previous years, the amount of faculty that have been at TYP has slowly been dwindling. Mm-hmm. This is because some faculty have retired, contracts are ending. They're not being canceled, but they're ending. And because of this allocation of funding, they will not be able to be replaced, and they can't be rehired. So starting September 2013, there will only be 4 faculty remaining. Currently, we have 9 faculty that's full-time and part-time. So pretty much you're getting cut more than half. So there are professors that teach things like English composition, taking into consideration that a lot of the students within TYP didn't finish high school or have been out of high school or college, any sort of formal education for multiple years, some over 20 something years. A course such as English composition gives you invaluable skills with writing, grammar skills, all the things you need for essay writing, for example, for you to be able to succeed when you go into mainstream university. And these are courses that students need extra help with. Certain students have disabilities that, or extenuating circumstances in their personal lives that cause them to not be able to hand in work on time, need extra help and stuff like that. So we have the faculty that are there and are able to provide all the additional support that you need. And when that additional support is gone, it's not affecting only on a personal level, but also it affects the academics of students that are coming into TYP.
Okay, so just going back to what I was asking earlier, can you guys touch base on what exactly U of T is giving as a reason for cutting, like, you know, the cutbacks or all these reforms, whatever you want to call it, to the program? Like, what are they telling you as alumni, as students? What are they telling you? Why are they cutting back by half of faculty? Like, what is the reason here? Or the logic?
I honestly don't see the logic behind it. Personally, I believe that they just don't want to see minorities succeed so tremendously, because everybody who comes through that transitional year program, their lifestyle, their background story is not the typical story that you would hear from a university student.
And to comment on what Abdi's pointing out, going back to Woodsworth bridging program only has a success rate of 35%, mm-hmm. and we have a success rate of 70-80%. Why would you want to amalgamate our program with that program that is way less than half successful as we are?
Whereas also the transition year program carries about an average of 75 students. Woodsworth has an average between, let's say, 600 to 900 students. If only 35% of your 600 to 900 students are graduating, that is nowhere close to TYP's 70 to 80% of the 75 students entering the Faculty of Arts and Science.
And I think it's important to note, even Shazali, what you were mentioning earlier in terms of, I'm assuming one excuse that would be given is this, allocation of funds, whatever ridiculous term they're banding about. Doublespeak, as you know, Orwell would say, that somehow there's, I mean, it would seem to indicate, even though they're not calling it a cut, there's not enough money to be redirected there. But we know that this is in fact not the case. So if we can go into a bit about what U of T's financial status is, and they seem to be pretty far from broke.
Yeah, that's far from true. Well, let me just touch on a few things. Like in 2011, UFT started this campaign. The theme was boundless, and their goal was to raise $2 billion. And as of September 2012, they have raised around $1.2 billion. I mean, where's this money being allocated to? I'll give you some examples. Like the Faculty of Law, they have a $53 million project, increasing their space, renovating their building, they're increasing their faculty, and then they have stuff. Well, like the Gold Ring Center for High Performance, that was $92 million project. I mean, we already have two gyms in the university. They're building another one. We have the engineering expansion. That's a $200 million project, which is the largest ever in Canadian history, right? And throughout that campaign, they had an overhead budget of $1 million across 12 months. I mean, just for the university-wide events in Canada, U.S., and some other international cities, right? And then this, I mean, TYP is one of the smallest programs in the University of Toronto. Mm. I mean, we incur a minuscule amount of money yearly. I think approximately about $1.4 million is our cost to run the transition year program. So how do they justify that? Not only that, I mean, the University of Toronto gets a $1 billion endowment a year on average from, like, alumni and donors and such, right? But, I mean, how do they justify this?
Sorry, I also just wanted to add in while we're on the topic of money, that same building that we keep talking about, 49 St. George Street, the Transitional Year Program home, that would cost about $500,000 to repair the damages that we have now, or about $1 million to destroy it and rebuild a new home for our students. Looking at all these digits we're talking about right now, $1 million. Even $2 million is not a lot of money to the University of Toronto. And I don't see the issue with putting up either that $500,000 to fix our building or the $1,000 to give us a new one.
Yeah, the list goes on. I mean, these are just several projects that they're, I mean, you walk around the University of Toronto, all you hear is there's just construction everywhere. I mean, you could even go on the website, the UFT's home website, and check out the, all this. There's so many projects listed there, right? Yeah. So,
And before we do run out of time, I do want to get into now the response, the grassroots response that is being mobilized. Whether it's the guys in suits, you know, making their measurements, or you know, the high level bureaucrats talking about funding allocation. We need to respond to this. You know, coming from the same communities that are benefiting from this program, it seems we need to respond to this attack. You mentioned the town hall, Heather. What has come out of this? What are the strategies that TYP students and supporters are putting forward to counter the attack?
At the town hall meeting, it was pretty much to get awareness out about the issues that are going on within the transitional year program and our relationship with the University of Toronto. Very soon, we will be having more meetings. We're having a meeting tomorrow as a collective preservation alliance to formulate new strategies and get this movement going. So right now we're just in a time of getting the word out, trying to build alliance with as many colleges, as many places within the university, within the GTA, to keep our program around.
Also, I just want to mention that during our town hall meeting, we had a representative from the provost office there. So he did encounter a lot of angry students, and a lot of them were showing their emotions and telling them their story. So if he did really take those students in and hear their stories and really actually care about what they just said, then that word will be getting back to the provost office, and they will be keep hearing more from the transition year program. We will not stop. They will hear our voice. We will be there. There's no quitting on behalf of us students.
Mm-hmm. I was just laughing a little there because it reminded me when we were in the town hall, the messenger they sent over as a representative, he couldn't even say the name of our program right. So, you know, I mean, this just shows how much they care about our program, you know? It's ridiculous.
No, it definitely is. So people, in terms of if they want to find out more information, if they want to support this in any way, where should they go? Who should they contact? And you guys have, you know, any ideas, particularly beyond the meetings and such, where you think it can head in terms of pushing back?
To contact the TYP Preservation Alliance, you can find us on Facebook. There's a Facebook page called the TYP Preservation Alliance. You can always send emails for information, updates on events that are going on to typ.actionplan@gmail.com. And there's another open Facebook page called Accessible Education Student Group. So you can always contact, post comments on there, and email for more information or to give your own feedback to and ways that we could use, things that we could use to help keep TYP going.
Absolutely. And so people should definitely check out TYP Preservation Alliance on Facebook. And keep an eye out for events. You know, as was mentioned, this program or an altered version of it exists at Ryerson. And these institutions are not, beyond taking the example of UT. If UT is successful in cutting this program, mm-hmm. we don't know what could take place next. And so it's important, you know, for any other students that are listening that may not be at U of T or directly in TYP, it still impacts all of us as somebody mm-hmm. who, you know, currently just, you know, barely finished high school myself and am not currently in post-secondary school, myself didn't even know about this program. And so this is something that, you know, can definitely benefit any one of us coming from a working class and mm-hmm. struggling background. And it's definitely something we need to come to the defense of. In conclusion, I just wanted to know, Shazali, Abdi, and Heather, if there's any last words you wanted to leave us with. I'm thinking particularly of the point that Abdi was making in terms of, you know, we know the issue isn't money. We know the issue isn't them suddenly being confused about 35 being larger than 80%, or it's not ignorance. This is a deliberate process, mm-hmm. and this is a process that historically has always taken place, whether it's in university institutions or any other institution of, you know, this type of system. what you think this is a part of, what you think this is, what larger, you know, societal or social policies this attack fits into.
Well, I think that the University of Toronto administration actions is clearly guided by persistent neo-colonial methods. I mean, they are conveying a message of negative racism, elitism, you know? They're trying to keep with their traditions. I mean, programs like us, the transition program, we challenge those traditions, right? And I guess it disturbs them, so, you know.
Also, it's funny that it comes down to, quote-unquote, the allocation or reallocation of funding. But at the same point, how are our small group of 75 students on average a year compared to your 50,000 mainstream students in the Faculty of Arts and Science? What big threat is 75 students to get into this colonial elitist systemic stuff that goes on inside the university? And also to note just... It's mind-boggling and it's baffling to me that, take in, for instance, the funding program that Shazali was mentioning, that it's boundless. How about you take your own advice and your own slogans and tokens and make your university boundless and make it accessible and make it equitable?
How about boundless transition year program, you know? How about that? We never hear any of that in the boundless campaign. And can I just take... Do we have more time? I just want to...
I know you wanted to give a recognition.
I just want to give recognition, I mean, on behalf of all the current students and alumni. We owe a lot of gratitude to the founders, faculty, and staff, past and present, for they have taught, guided, and nurtured us with their support. I mean, they do all this with respect and love, and we have a deep appreciation for their commitment and all those extra hours they put in. I mean, they don't get compensation. They don't get paid for all those extra hours they put in. And they also have their own lives and hectic schedules to deal with. So we love you to all the faculty and staff, and their contribution is immense, you know. So that's all.
Absolutely.
I have to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All of you guys,
much.
Abdi, Heather, and Shazali, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you guys for having us.
Absolutely. This is something that Basics is definitely going to be following up with. And, you know, a message to U of T that you're definitely not going to get away with this, at least not without a fight.
Of course not.
And just to let our audience know, we will put up the website on Basics News website, and all the information that they are mentioning, and also the podcast of this will also be available online. So you can definitely check it out if you want. If you missed part of the conversation, you can definitely check it out there. Plus, like I always say, you know, time's out. We are kind of running into the next show, so we do need to get out of here. But if you have any feedback, any concerns, you want to share some love, criticisms, you're an artist who wants us to play some of your music, please send it off to us at radiobasics@gmail.com. All right, so that's it for tonight. Thank you very much, guys, for showing up today. Really appreciate it. And till next week, we are out. Any last words, Kabir? All right. Peace out, Toronto. You enjoy the rest of your evening and see you next week.